This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
My name is Tim Nicholson. Welcome to Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. It's lovely to have your company. I'm very happy to be joined in the studio today by two strapping young men, Mike Costello and Byron Mathiudakis. Thank you, boys, for joining us.
Thank you for calling me strapping. You need to get your eyes checked, mate.
Anytime. Well, Mike just had his sunglasses on in here. I'm not sure what that's about, guys.
Just doing my best John Laws impersonation.
Is that what he does?
He used to wear sunglasses inside. I don't have a golden microphone, though.
No.
For some of us who are older, we'll remember Corey Hart.
Yes,
to wear.
Although sunglasses do seem a bit inappropriate because it's so humid outside and melting.
Yeah, that's all right, though. Mm. You know, you do whatever you feel necessary. You are listening to Fender Bender. We've got lots of juicy motoring gossip coming up on the show. Byron's going to tell us all about his travels in Europa, and we're looking very forward to hearing about that. It'll be kind of like a slide night, but you won't be able to see anything because it's the radio. But hopefully you'll have some tales to tell. We're also going to have a look at the non-Germanic European cars on offer that we've threatened to talk about the last 2 weeks, but ran out of time because we talk too much crap. And we're also going to launch the Fender Bender Raddest Car of 2011 Awards.
Radman.
Woohoo! That's right. It might be a lame name, but...
I do. It's an interesting choice of name.
Well, we sound like- look... If someone can think of a better name, maybe if you want to think of a better name, because it is reasonably lame.
Radical.
I don't think anyone's taken it, so you should run with it.
Well, that's what I'm thinking, maybe. I was trying to think of kind of a gayish thing to go with, because it's Joy, but couldn't really think of anything. So if anyone thinks of a natty name for our Car of the Year award, go to our Facebook page if you like. That would be wonderful. And go and like Fender Bender Joy at Facebook. Lots and lots coming up on the show for you today. We'll be back with more very shortly.
Edit. 4, 3, 2, 1.
Bit of Jay Jackson to get the show started, purely because I went and saw her during the week and she was super, super fun. And that was All For You by Janet Jackson. You're listening to Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. We have a large amount of stuff to get through today, so we're going to kick it off with some news, Mike.
Awesome.
Go, Mike.
Hit us with the news, mate.
Yeah.
Well, VFAX came out during the week. Do we know what VFAX is? We know what VFAX is.
I think so. It's the
sales. We've discussed this before,
yes.
I think. So, monthly sales came out. Big news. Holden Commodore was the fifth biggest selling car for the month.
Mm. Not a good week for the Commodore, but we'll get onto that later.
No, it certainly wasn't. And we certainly will be discussing it a bit more in depth a bit later on. But yeah, it finished fifth. And Commodore is always in, you know, right at the very, very, the very sort of pinnacle. And I mean, in your memory, I mean, how long has it been since it would have finished that low, Byron? Can you recall it happening at all?
Well, I remember in January 1983 when the Camaro outsold it. So that's going
Did
back
it really?
A bit. Yep. The Camaro had...
That's
a,
hilarious.
Yeah, I know. It was during the...
that's a pretty damning indictment on Australian culture right there, isn't it?
It's a pretty damning indictment on my memory as well as my age, I think.
It's a spectacular memory you've got. But,
yeah. That was kind of the... what would it be? The nadir of the Commodore's... Commodore years, when the VH Commodore was a bit long in the tooth. Yep. People were buying Falcons. God, this seems like such a long time ago, doesn't it, when people were buying more Falcons and Commodores?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So that really goes to show just how big this news is to finish fifth, and it was beaten by a trio of small segment cars, the usual suspects, Corolla and Mazda 3, of course, and also the Volkswagen Golf, which had a smashing month on the back of various, they put it at a no-cost, no-on-road cost.
3,337 units, I believe, just thereabouts.
It'd be their biggest golf month ever. They had a massive one in June, but this was bigger.
Mm. And this would be surely biggest. They've never been in the top
this
five
would be,
before.
Well, you know, and 3,300 odd would normally get you first.
It's a golf war.
So we almost had it. Well,
oh, my goodness.
That's a headline right there.
Hey, it is. Write it down quick.
Just, well, I'm imagining, because that would normally get you first, 3,300.
Right.
And imagine if the Golf for a month was the top-selling car. That would have been amazing.
Well, I guess it would have been if Toyota hadn't been doing such amazing... What is it? Finance deals.
Yeah. They hit one too because they had Corolla and Hilux first and second because they've obviously had stock problems with the tsunami and whatnot, but they've got on deck with that again, back on track with their stock levels, yet to see how the Thailand flood affects them.
So how did it go? Did it go Corolla, Hilux, Golf, didn't it?
Yeah.
And then Mazda 3.
Then Mazda 3, then Commodore.
Yeah.
Commodore is still number one for the year.
We need to get a life, don't we, to know that stuff.
Nerds. No.
Yes. Yes, we are.
What am I doing in my life? No. But so Commodore's still number one for the year.
Yeah.
But just by the skin of his teeth. And so this is pretty bad.
The high sales, though, was what happened in October? Is that a traditional year where everyone goes, out they must go?
Well, this year, Toyota had their reasons for doing their sort of incentives been pushing out because they've obviously been hit really hard by the tsunami and they're doing whatever it takes to claw back some volume. Volkswagen had their special deal on the Golf and that was the top three.
Yeah.
So that's probably more the reason.
I think there's a supply thing also out of Europe because I think the factories shut down in July or August and then they start up again in September. So, you know, I think there's just more ships coming in with instant deliveries.
More cars on the grass.
So,
yeah.
I mean, it's as basic as that. And also, near the end of the year and people want to get the numbers up for 2011.
Makes sense.
Mm. So, yes, that was a very interesting little breakdown.
I don't think that's going to be typical, like the Golf being
three. So once in a blue moon, they'll have enough stock to do it, but generally they don't. It's going to hover around the 1,200 mark.
So. That's right, because it's going to be out of the Mazda 3 and the Commodore, I think.
They're the top two for the year. Yep. So. There was also a couple of reveals during the week of upcoming cars. There was the Peugeot 208. Is one that was revealed. So they've got the 207 light car at the moment, the Volkswagen Polo rival, the Mazda 2 rival, sort of their Euro take on it. 208 is the next one. Mm. And they've just revealed it. They're going to bring it to Australia from around October next year. This is a really good-looking car. It's a big step up in class. Peugeot's got the new 508 sedan out and a few other models. They've gone in a different direction with their styling, and this kind of embodies that.
Mm.
So it's a big move up market. It's also smaller than the current 207, which is unusual because new cars tend to get bigger.
I like that, though, because I just think it's just going to get ridiculous in 20 years' time. How bloody big are these small cars going to be?
It's a featherweight. The base model's 975 kilos, which is lighter than just about anything.
I suspect what happened is that Peugeot took a long, hard look at the Mazda 2 because that was the first modern car, light car, to really embrace lightness and not going bigger. In fact, it was significantly smaller than its predecessor, as you may recall, like the boxy old Demio trucks. And it's a move in the right direction, but also the Mazda 2 has aged really well, I think, from a stylistic point of view. And I can see a bit of Mazda 2 in this 208.
Mm.
And thanks to the magic of radio, you can't.
It's up on our Facebook, so check it out.
Yeah, while you're there,
In slightly less exciting news, and we don't want to sink the boot into this company too much because we have been, but we will again. It's the Honda CR-V. It's their little compact SUV, as you all know. We talked about their concept not so long ago. They've put out pictures of the actual car, and it's pretty dull.
I'm sorry. Honda are a great company. They really are, but I just think that this SUV looks just a bit John Merrick-ish to me.
And we say it out of love.
Oh, my God, from Mask.
No, that's Eric Stoltz from Mask. John Merrick is Elephant Man.
Elephant Man?
Yeah. I'm sorry. It's awful thing to say. The good people at Honda will hate me for it. I just don't like the look of it. It looks like...
It's bland, isn't it? It's pretty bland.
Well, it was designed for the US market.
Mm.
And isn't everything they do designed for the US market?
We say this out of love because we do love Honda.
Hang on, let me put a positive spin on that. They have got a very exciting little car coming up called the CRZ. So all the So just to balance things out,
Launched very late this year.
Mm.
Yep.
A little hybrid sports car.
But tell you what, though, the CRV will still sell by the bucket load.
It will. But, you know, it used to be, I mean, the first one was, you know, an amazing car. It sort of was one of the early adopters in its segment, and it used to be the best-selling car for a long time. It's been well overtaken by a host of other models, X-Trails, Foresters, and whatnot, and they need this new one to come, regardless.
Yeah.
They really need it.
It was the only SUV in its class in 1997 with a picnic table at the back.
I do remember that.
What do you talk? The door comes down as a picnic table?
No. I think it was the cargo floor had legs, card table style.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, people, but I do believe this was one of its USPs.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's almost as good as the Nissan Micra having a handbag holder in the passenger seat.
Or a takeaway holder as well.
Oh, heaven.
Mm.
Excitement. Yeah, that's right. So that's about it for the week.
Oh, we could go on all day.
We could go on, but I have to put an ad on. Oh. So let's do that first, okay. And we'll come back. You're listening to Fender Bender on Joy 94.9.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You're listening to Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. Just continuing the news theme, Mike brought up a little earlier about Holden have had a reasonably hellish week in the sales and also in their, I guess, PR-wise. Not amazing. We've seen, obviously, the unions come out and reveal private talks, and it hasn't gone down well, guys. What's the story?
Well, people aren't buying large cars in Australia anymore, and, you know, that's revealed in the VFACTS that we just spoke about. And so Holden basically is pondering, and quite rightly, whether it's going to spend another $500 million to $1 billion developing a next generation Commodore in Australia. We're not talking the next generation, actually. We're talking the generation after. So we're talking 2020-ish. Mm-hmm. They're going to put a top hat on the existing car. So that means they're going to reskin it, basically, with a new interior, new exterior, and new engines in 2014. And that's the VF, codename VF vehicle. But after that, there's no guarantee that the next car will be engineered or designed in Australia, and that's the big deal.
Okay, mm-hmm. So then the VF or whatever it's going to be the next model, that's not an entirely new model then.
No, but I mean, to you and I, it will be, like, for what we can see and what we'll be able to drive, it'll feel significantly.
They're saying it's going to be substantially lighter than the current one. Uh-huh. Well, it's one of the things that we do know.
Yeah, they're going to be using a bit more aluminium, but the point is that Ford has been copying this sort of speculation for years now as well, and it just doesn't make sense for car companies who spent such vast monies on developing cars just for Australia when the entire globe is moving towards lighter, smaller cars. So it's inevitable, folks. The Commodore will eventually be probably a front or all-wheel drive car that is about the size of today's Mondeo or Camry, and because that's where the money is. People just aren't spending, you know, the bucks on big cars anymore.
Do you think it was... What do you think of the tactic of the union coming out and revealing these private talks? What's their angle there?
Well, I guess they... I mean, you can understand that people don't want to lose their jobs. And it's not just jobs. It's also a brain drain in this country. You know, people go to school to be engineers and, you know, and to be designers and all that sort of thing. And the car company is really at the vanguard of that. They hire the best, and Australia is amongst the best in the world for that. It doesn't mean that engineering will stop in Australia. I think what the unions are scared of is that, you know, everything will go offshore. We'll lose this capacity to engineer and design cars in this country, because we're only one of maybe five or six countries in the world where we can design a car from ground up. So
that's something worth holding on to if we can.
Yeah. We can. Look, I think, you know, the Ford Ranger, which I think you guys spoke about fairly recently, is an example of how Australians can engineer a car for the world market without it actually necessarily having to be built here. I mean, it'd be great if it could be built here, but it's not, because the economies just aren't there. But at least, you know, there's a lot of Australian ingenuity in that vehicle. And I think that will continue with both Holden and Ford, whether it's going to be in the shape of a rear-wheel drive V8 car like the Falcon and Commodore are at the moment, or whether it would be something different is yet to be determined. But to answer your question, the engineers just don't want change, because change is scary and you can't really blame them, can you?
Oh, look, totally. But there's just... it's really funny. I think no one's job's guaranteed these days. No one's is. It's so hard to do that, and for the unions to come out and say... And I totally get why they're doing it. I'm not bagging unions at all. But it's just... I just don't think it's going to help people. You know, the whispers of Ford taking the Falcon out of Australia. Look at the sales of the Falcon, and it's a great car.
Yeah.
Will this do the same to the Commodore? Yeah. You know, these whispers of...
Well, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy in that regard, isn't it? And it's sad, but, you know, I heard just quietly from someone somewhere not too long ago within that organisation that Holden will have to make this decision shortly, like probably within the next... You know, it's a matter of months, really, and Ford will as well. And it really, really is likely that the design and even maybe the building of these cars may go offshore. But that's just the reality. When we're buying 3,337 Golfs instead of, you know, the Holden Cruise Hatch or the Ford Falcon or the Territory Camry and Commodore, well, you know, you've got to do the sums.
Exactly. I mean, we'd love to hear from you. If would this affect you? Do you care, dear listeners, where your car is built? Let us know your feelings on this. Are you upset that this might happen, or do you just not care? We would love to hear from you. Lots more to come on Fender Bender. Bit of Miami horror there on Fender Bender. You are listening to Fender Bender, which I just said. I just thought I'd say it twice, just in case you forgot in the last 2 seconds. We've had a text from Tess regarding the Commodore conversation we were having before that song. Tess has said, isn't the basic Commodore design from Opel/Opel in Germany? Tess and Byron, what's the answer there?
Oh, God, our listeners are smarter than we are. That's true, Tess. The Commodore is... Well, the Commodore was a German design. The VB Commodore of 78 was a development, strengthening and eventually a widening and lengthening of basic German designs for three generations, the VB, the VN and the VT. So... 78, 88, and 97. Okay. But the VE from 2006 is actually the first truly indigenous Commodore.
Oh, there you go.
Saying indigenous. Indigenous Commodore. So it's a shame, really. I mean, that's why it was the billion-dollar baby, because it was designed from scratch right here in beautiful Port Melbourne.
Beautiful, sunny Melbourne. How exciting. And you, Byron, have had a chance to depart our shores recently and venture overseas for a few launches. Is that right?
That's right. I've been driving some electric cars. There's been a flurry of activity.
I like that word.
Yes. There's probably some electrical kind of pun there. Flurry.
Yeah.
You know, they're almost upon us. This year really.
The floodgates are just creaking ever so slightly.
Yeah. Well, the door's cracked. Really. You know, we've got the IMEV and the Leaf will be here next year. But I've been driving a plug-in hybrid electric vehicle diesel from Volvo, the V60.
A hybrid electric diesel?
That's right. So that's not actually a pure electric vehicle, so I'll just quickly touch on that.
Okay.
It's a diesel. It's basically a diesel V60 Volvo, so we're talking about a car in the $60,000 to $80,000 range that has a five-cylinder diesel at the front and an electric motor at the back. And for most of the time, for 80% of commutes, it would be purely electric, driving the rear wheel. So it's a rear drive electric vehicle Volvo, and that's what we were driving around in Gothenburg. It'll be here probably in late 2013 or 2014 after a international rollout a little bit earlier. And it's awesome to drive. Like, it's basically the diesel kicks in when you run out of charge, so you don't get range anxiety. So that was the first car we drove.
And that's especially good for somewhere like Australia. Without that heavy infrastructure for electric cars, it does take away, like you said, a lot of that worry about, am I going to run out? You know, I've got 120Ks before I need to go home and charge. If the battery does go flat, you've got a combustion engine to, you know, ease some of those doubts.
It's true there, Miss Costello, that's true. But I've got to say...
You just called me Miss Costello.
I've got to say, though, that... Well, I forgot my point. Oh, yes. Most journeys, most commutes are probably within the 50 to 60 kilometre range per day.
They are.
And you've only got to use personal experience. I mean, once in a blue moon, you take a commute out to the country, but general day-to-day driving, getting to work, etc., 50 to 60 Ks is about it.
But are we just saying that because we live in the city? Like, all of my family live in regional Victoria.
As do mine, and they would be a different kettle of fish.
Do you know what I mean?
This is where I think, you know, eventually electric cars will get to the point where they can go a lot further.
Mm. Well, and that segs beautifully in the second part of my trip. Actually, this was a
smooth.
Separate there, so I know I'm very smooth. Yeah. When Volvo dumped me back here, I had to fly to Europe again, to Portugal,
Must have been awful for you.
That was bloody awful. God. I went to a place just south of Lisbonne to drive a bunch of Renault electric vehicles, which are definitely coming to Australia.
Now, Renault's really at the forefront of EV technology worldwide. They're one of the big players, along with their alliance partner, Nissan, of course.
Indeed. Mm. Yep, they basically want to electrify a good part of their range by 2020, and they're well on the way to doing that. Mm. Part of the trip also had the Better Place battery swap stations, where for those 5% of journeys where you want to travel beyond, say, the 160 to 200 kilometre range, perhaps for a couple of boys like you who want to go and visit your folks or your family back in regional places. You drive up to what looks like a petrol station, you put your car over a ramp, and the battery pack, the lithium-ion battery pack, is swapped from go to O within 4 minutes. So
it's like swapping a gas bottle on your barbecue almost, isn't it?
Exactly. And you don't like you don't have to get out of the car. You feel a bit of a jolt, but it's not like, you know, it's not an invasive thing. It just kind of drops, this thing kind of slides from under, clamps onto it, and swaps a charged the depleted battery for a charged one. And you might think, gee, that'll be expensive, but it isn't. It's actually technically for free, because with these vehicles you have to hire or rent or lease the battery rather on a monthly basis, and that hasn't been determined yet. But Better Place says that if you spend more than $80 a week on fuel, it will actually, you'll be better off using the battery swap technology. So and that will give you a full, that'll give you another couple of hundred kilometres of range. And eventually this infrastructure will be rolled out.
And everywhere. They have very grand ambitions for Australia. Yeah. Better Place.
I see. I thought they were Australian. So they're not an Australian company.
No.
Okay.
No. They're based in Israel, and they are Shai Agassi, who is an entrepreneur, kind of a Silicon Valley kind of multi-gazillionaire.
Yeah, yeah.
His quote is, he wants to free the world from the oil dependency.
Good for him.
You know, he's shooting high.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, big ambitions. But with the batteries, this might be a stupid question. So the battery gets taken out, and what, does that just go and get recharged and gets reused by the next car that comes in? Okay, good. I had a thought there that...
No. See, the battery is one of the single most expensive part of electric vehicles. I mean, people are banding around figures like 15 to 25 grand a piece for these, you know, super high-tech lithium battery packs.
What?
They're really expensive. If you imagine a smartphone or any basic mobile phone and how you kind of... That's a lithium-ion battery in there as well. It's that kind of... it's kind of like a bigger version of your mobile, except, you know, you... Instead of, you know, charging it every night, that's what you're meant to do. But for those longer trips, you just do the battery swap. And not every electric vehicle that's coming here will be capable of that. There'll only be a couple of Renaults to begin with will have it.
The benefit, of course, of that is if you're buying a car and the battery pack is a separate purchase, you can buy the EV car with the Fluence as the first one, the Fluence ZE, will be cheaper to buy than the average electric car to get the car itself. And then you deal with the battery lease on the side. So there are cost benefits to this as well.
And the other benefit is battery technology is moving at a fairly rapid pace. So when you swap your battery for a new one, you'll probably get the 2013 battery pack, which might be lighter, or, you know, it might have 20 or 30% more efficiency or that sort of thing. So you're not stuck with an old piece of technology.
Okay.
So that's the other benefit.
Yeah. So this wasn't the Fluence that you drove, or was it?
No,
this was
Yes, the Fluence is the car that we'll have it first.
Yep.
We're going to get two Renaults with EV, full EV Renaults during 2012. The first will be a Fluence, and it will be under $40,000 for a well-equipped car with satellite navigation and a few other bits and bobs, and the battery swap technology. But also, there will be the Kangoo EV, and that was actually my favourite car that I drove.
I love the idea, because the Kangoo's it's a little light commercial vehicle, a bit like a Volkswagen Caddy, small van. Yeah. This car excites me a lot, because, you know, everyone loves a small van. They're so useful, so handy.
Really?
And this is a fully electric one.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm no fan of the... I shouldn't say this. I'm not a big fan of the Fluence, because I think it's... You know, it's not the sharpest tool in the small car shed, but it's very good value for money. The Kangoo, on the other hand, has got decent steering and ride and handling, and it's fun to drive. And
this is like a little, like, you know, you see tradies, or, you know, maybe not tradies, it's probably not so butch for a tradie to have something like that, but somebody with a little business, like a cleaning business or whatever, they have these things. Well, that's good that they're making it drivable and enjoyable, because people who drive those cars are out on the road all the time.
Exactly,
so that makes
their
sense.
Office, so they might as well enjoy their jobs. And these things have got... They can be charged fairly rapidly, and that charging capacity, or capacity to charge quickly, is also coming along nicely. So it makes sense if they're on the road a lot, and then they're parked for an hour or two, or, you know, doing work or whatever, they can charge the car then and there, and they're good.
Beautiful. Mm. Oh, sounds good. So you've had quite the adventure then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Good for you. It's funny with Renault. was it the Laguna that was the quite unusual mid-size car and that they ditched, I think?
They've now got the Latitude in its place.
Now, see, I'm getting confused. So is the Latitude the same design as the Fluence?
No. No, the Latitude is basically a rehashed Nissan Maxima, built by Samsung in Korea, very well equipped. You know, it's overflowing with equipment, and it's priced amongst the mid-sizes, yet is a bit larger. It's got a V6 and a diesel option. Again, not the sharpest car in its class.
It's not an excitement machine. No. But is that what you're getting at?
If you want features over dynamics, you could do a lot worse.
Folks, think a lot of people do.
Folks, think Toyota Crown.
Oh, my God.
No, that's awkward. No, they're very good cars.
Yep.
In other ways.
That's good to hear. In other ways, that's right. Well, you are listening to Fender Bender. We'll be back with more very shortly.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You're listening to Fender Bender on Joy 94.9, as that voiceover just said you were listening to. Now, we've had another text in about the Opel Holden thing.
Yes, we've got Bruce from East St Kilda who has asked, is the Opel Astra and Barina coming back? And yes, absolutely, they are both coming back. Opel is launching itself in Australia in the third quarter of next year.
Mm-hmm.
It will bring back the Astra, and it will bring it back the Barina, but the Barina will be badged as a Corsa, because Holden, of course, sell the Barina themselves already.
Of course it will.
Hey, I like what you did there.
Whoa, zing.
Yeah.
But that will be a massive leg up, in my opinion, for Opel in getting itself out there, because it's using the Astra name, which is a well-known name already, so it certainly helps their cause when they're launching with a name like that.
Absolutely.
And not a bad-looking vehicle, I must say, as well.
The whole Opel range looks the insignia as well. They all look really quite good.
And also, there could be others, like the Zafira, which is a people mover.
So the range will get bigger and bigger as they move.
Yeah, that's right. They're basically going after Volkswagen.
Yeah, well, go for gold. Good luck to them.
So they want they're sort of not quite super premium Euro in your BMW Mercedes league, positioning themselves a bit above the Japanese and Koreans, very Volkswagen-esque.
Yeah,
it'll be
interesting
and
to see.
The Euro cash is a big deal in Australia.
Yeah,
Australian buyers do value that sort of European flavour, the Peugeots and Citroens and Volkswagens. It means a lot to have that European kind of
You'll be able to buy them, I guess, at your Holden dealer. Well, they're going to have
That one's interesting, isn't
it?
Well, they're going to have a separate Opel part, like maybe a separate
section
building
or whatever.
But I don't think they're going to be standalone. Correct me if I'm wrong, if anyone knows out there, but I think that's
perhaps initially anyway.
Yeah, and if it goes through the roof. Look, I think it'll work because
they've
of
got,
that
they've
Astra
got
name
GM
plate.
Behind them, you know,
and
that's
exactly.
A very, very handy thing to have behind you, something like that. So
I think the only question will be, will people pay a little bit more for an Astra when a few years ago they were paying the same price as a Focus?
Excellent
or something
point.
Like that.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I'm really excited about this. The nerdy motoring nerd in me, I'm very excited.
That is an enormous smile. That is an ear smile.
It is. You might have been able to hear it. No, I think it's super exciting. I can't wait for it.
Yeah. So the short answer, Bruce, is yes and yes.
Thank you. Which brings us to our next little segment. We are talking, obviously, Opel's German.
The segues again.
I know.
Oh, my God. We're on fire.
Segway festival. Speaking of, you know those segues, those things that you stand on?
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
I keep seeing segway trucks around Melbourne. In the last week, I've seen three.
You're kidding me.
Are people buying these
people
things?
Are just cruising around. Where are you seeing these?
I don't even know. Where am I? On the way to uni?
Really?
Yes.
They had them at the Frankfurt Motor Show as a way of getting from one hall to the other, because they're so far away from each other. So these
Mangas
were on them. But I didn't use them.
Byron, come on, you didn't?
Of course. I didn't. I really wanted to. Hey, do you know the person who invented the Segway died on the Segway?
Phil Segway. Segwayed off a cliff.
Are you kidding? His name is Phil Segway?
No. Was it?
I believe it was.
Oh, I don't know.
That's the best thing.
Anyway,
He did.
I don't know whether he meant to or...
Apparently, he was giving way to somebody and he lost control, but whatever the circumstances were, he did segue off a large, high place.
Yep. I'm sorry to laugh at that. I just can't help think of Job.
We have a minute of silence, but this is radio. We can't.
Exactly.
That would be really boring review.
Exactly. It could be extremely awkward. Yeah. But no, look, we did want to have
back to the actual segue.
Exactly.
A segue from a segue, that was.
We were talking about, there's obviously the German, the big three, four German companies get a huge amount of press in this country, and they sell like hotcakes. But you know what? There are other countries out there in Europe that deserve our attention as buyers.
And perhaps we're not talking so much about... Everyone knows Ferrari and Lamborghini and these, you know, these kind of marks.
Sorry, where but, this is going.
But perhaps we're going to talk about the ones that get a little bit less coverage.
Well, possibly. Possibly.
We've mentioned Peugeot and Renault already today. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. So how are their sales in this country? A few years ago, Renault weren't doing that well. Yeah. What are they like now? Do they do okay?
Well, they've had an enormous... They're almost 100% up.
Coming from an admittedly low base, yeah, low but base. They are a long way up. They've released the new Megane came out late last year, and they've got a bunch of different variants. Recently launched a diesel of that. They've got the Latitude, which we've talked about, a bunch of EV or two EVs around the corner. Mm. So Renault's one that since they relaunched here in 2001, this year and last year, they've really upped their presence, you know, because they hit rock bottom there for a while and they've really climbed. Yep. And Peugeot is another interesting one because their latest releases, and I know Byron will be able to tell you more about this, is they've come a long way. The 508 is a, you know, well-made...
It's a semi-decent car. I mean,
is it?
Yes, absolutely. Peugeot, some people might think Peugeot had lost their way over the last few years. People say ugly stick.
The 407, of course, had the biggest mouth, like a big guppy fish grill on it, like a giant.
And was that the
gaping,
hatchback?
No,
that was the big sedan with the front overhang was about
Mondeo
4 acres
competitor,
long.
So, but that was done partly to for pedestrian impact ratings. But yeah, Peugeot sacked its designer or design group, design team, and got in a new person, and the 208. And I guess the 508 are the first fruit, but especially the 208 is really the first fruit of his work at Peugeot, and it's looking good. But then there's Citroën.
I was going to say.
Citroën. There are... The DS3 was one of my favourite cars of last year, but only the manual, the auto, is rubbish. No, the manual is just... like awesome.
It is one of the most especially if you have the contrasting roof colour, it is one of the most eye catching little hot hatches you'll ever see. It looks phenomenal
and great to drive as well. Anyway, that's been such a success from globally. There's a DS4 and soon a DS5,
and their DS range is sort of a little bit more upmarket than their sort of standard models. They've kind of divided their range into two almost.
Yep. And it's also, though, harking back to the... Wasn't the DS a nameplate back in the...
And Mr. Byron, of course, is very familiar with the DS, aren't you?
Because I've owned two of them. That's right. I reckon the most beautiful cars of all time, production cars of all time.
Are these are they called Goddess?
The Goddess, indeed. And that's what DS... is in French, Goddess. DS. Or DSA. I'm like French, sorry.
Oui, oui.
Indeed. That's right. Si vous plaît.
Yeah.
Oui, oui.
Si vous plaît.
But the DS is seriously just still one of the head-turning moments in automotive history.
It is an... gorgeous, gorgeous car.
Frankly, I think it's terrible that they're desecrating a name, such a hallowed name on cars...
But at
that
least
are basically just hot hatches, or but you know,
maybe if it's the wrong way to be doing that, the wrong way to kind of look back. And it's interesting, when I grew up, there was a family in Hamilton where I grew up, and they had like five Citroëns outside their house. But I loved the 80s Citroën,
the BX,
maybe
the one that was looked like origami.
Yeah, a little bit. It came in this like Kermit green. Oh, I'll have to find it and put
maybe
a photo
you think of
on
the CX, which is a '70s.
Must have been late '70s.
Yeah. Very futuristic.
Yes. Yeah. Totally.
That is
awesome.
Interesting thing about Citroën owners, because they're a good example. Mm. A lot of people who own one Citroën own several.
Yeah.
And you go from Citroën to Citroën to Citroën. Very, very loyal clientele.
And that's not because A, you need several to have one good car, or B, because they're the only ones who give you decent training for your old Citroën. That's not true. Nothing to do with that at all. No. Citroën's... they're on the way up. Anyway, the point is that they're on the way up. They're an interesting car with a massive history, you know.
Because they had quite a bland time in, I think it was the 90s
with
and
the
early 90s.
Xara and the Xantia.
Right.
And the
well, I didn't mind the Xantia. My mum still has a Xantia. Oh, yeah. I thought that was a nice piece of, I think it was Pininfarina or Buitoni. Anyway,
one of
design.
Them.
But yeah, the Xara was there. And the C5, like the old C5, the new one.
The new one looks great. I still like the, is it the C6?
C6, yeah.
Just a crazy
stunning,
looking beast.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely ridiculous. Mm. So that's the French. Mm-hmm. We've got, now, we don't have this company in this country. We did a few years ago and it didn't do very well. And I'm talking about, of course, the Spanish brand. Say it.
Say
See?
It.
Oh, I remember that slogan. Well, you see, this is interesting because they're a Volkswagen brand. They're Volkswagen's sort of sporty brand. I mean, Volkswagen have Skoda, which is their entry-level brand, and then Audi is their model upmarket luxury brand, and Seat is sold throughout Europe as it's got a bit of sporting flavour. So it's like a Skoda and Volkswagen. They're all based on the same architecture.
Yep.
Society Espanol Automobile de Torino, because they started off as a Fiat. And Spanish government enterprise.
And, Voxy subsumed them. Yeah. And they do have sporting ambitions. Now, I think what's stopping them coming to Australia is there are a lot of brands, over 60 brands for a 1 million sales market in Australia. Mm. Volkswagen have Audi, they have VW, obviously, and they have Skoda here. And their Skoda's really growing here. Recently launched Yeti and Fabia. And so...
But we're talking German cars. No, we've got to get off this. We're still talking...
Well, it's funny because...
They're
not really that Spanish anymore.
But we can talk about one of the more popular English cars in Australia.
English cars, you say?
Do you know which car I'm talking about?
Oh, I do indeed.
And it's a Micra?
I think you should tell
the listeners. Very close. Not Micra, but the Dualis, which they currently shift, between 700 and 900 a month. And combined with the X-Trail, is the best-selling SUV.
Well, Nissan have... biggest selling compact SUV maker with the two.
Anyway, the Dualis. Oh God, I love talking about the Dualis.
No, it's a cash car. You love the Dualis.
I just think it's an underrated vehicle. Wow. The Dualis is built in England and only in England.
Yep.
Oh, maybe it's
Sunderland.
Sunderland. Well, maybe it's built in Japan for Japan.
No, DM. England. UK. Yeah, Qashqai is UK only.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking maybe there's a JDM version that's built in Japan. But anyway, it recently became the seventh most popular English engineered and designed car in history.
What the what?
I know, because it's been a massive hit around
the
world.
In fact, one quarter of Nissan's sales in the UK, in Europe, in fact, I believe, are Qashqai or Dualis.
Same thing. Which is funny, because I saw sales during the week for Europe, and that was right up there, and it reached some huge height, and I was quite shocked. Because
Was the European sales chart called the Final Countdown? Sorry.
Oh, my God. Wowzers.
We're going to play that song next week.
At some point. Absolutely.
So we're talking about an English car there, which isn't German.
That's true. Mm. Well, there'll be more non-Germanic European cars to talk about after these messages.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You're listening to Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. We've been talking about European cars that aren't from Germany.
It's true. They do exist.
They do.
Yep. There was another country, of course, that we've missed and that's had its ups and downs. Sweden.
Oh, yes. Yes.
How could we forget,
guys? And I love Volvo.
Oh, so do I.
I have to come out and say. But, of course, the other big Swedish brand is perhaps not in quite so strong a position as well.
Owned Saab, which... We should have spoken about this as a news item. It's a melodrama. Mm. You know, the ownership.
Oh, it's like a roller coaster. And if you were tired of Saab, it's like an emotional roller coaster, isn't it?
About a week ago came through that a Chinese brand conglomerate known as Young Man.
Wow, that was really well. That was even well choreographed.
Anyway, so Young Man have put in a proposal to buy Saab. I think that it's all been signed, sealed, but not delivered because GM has arced up, saying...
And there's always this problem, and this has happened before. There was another... Was it the Pengdar thing before the Young Man
thing? Did you just say a real word then?
Yeah, I did.
Mike made that word up.
I think so. Yeah.
But the point is, there's been lots of dramas. Saab's trying to get funding from Chinese company, and there are problems, and there continues to be problems.
Yeah, that's right. So the Chinese are interested in the safety... Basically, the safety record that both Saab and Volvo, because Volvo is also owned by
Geely.
By Geely, indeed. One of the things, actually, that I garnered from my trip to Gothenburg is just how hands-off the Chinese are with Volvo.
Ah.
They realise that they've got a brand with massive credibility in terms of, you know, design and safety. Yes.
Do not mess
with it. And so they're not going to mess with it.
Good.
Yep. And I took a wrong turn and saw a secret model. And I had the people, you know, say, no, come this way, the Swedish. Please come this way, Byron. But I managed to take a photo. See, I'm showing everyone now the photo.
Yep.
I took a photo. Oh, how good is it? I took a photo of the new 5-door hatchback from Volvo coming out next year at Geneva Motor Show. And we don't know the name, but we think it's going to be called the V40. It's basically the Focus kind of Volvo-fied, because Volvo did the safety and body engineering for the Focus, the new Focus, which not many people know that, and they actually claim it as their own. So that's a
sure
real
they do.
Well, it's a real feather in the Focus's hat, because it's a damn fine car.
Anyway, about time they get a smaller kind of contender, though. Volvo. I mean, they've got the C30, but it's only two door, and that's
it's a four seater only.
I mean, the small segment is the segment, especially in a country like Australia. It's the biggest by a mile, and this is, you know, the key to them really boosting their volume and boosting their numbers. Yep. This is where they need to be. Yep.
Good luck to them. Yep. Yeah.
That's right. And soon, young man might do the same with the Saab.
Of course, though, interestingly enough, Peter Horbury, the head of Volvo Design, moved to Geely during the week.
And he's not a young man, but he's experienced.
So Geely, they may not be influencing how Volvo's run, but they are trying to learn from them by poaching their design director.
Well, good
for
them. You know, that's fine.
And that's great, because that's what we need to see. Because we've talked before about the fact that Chinese cars leave a lot to be desired as a rule, and hopefully they're, you know.
And folks, I've been indoctrinated. This is me just going to the Volvo crash test center. Please wear your seatbelts and buckle your kids up, because every time you go to one of these places, they show
Volvo's safety center in Gothenburg looks
is astounding.
I mean, their reputation for safety is. Yeah. It comes from a solid place, we'll say that.
Yep. So that's where Volvo has been a leader, you know, for many decades in safety. So
beautiful.
So we can't. That's one German, non-German car brand that deserves.
And that's today's lecture. Summed up.
Yep.
Yes. You can have a 10-minute break now, and then you've got to come back.
Did you say lecture or lecture?
A lecture. That's creepy. Yes. Look, we have come to the end of the show, guys. Unfortunately, we don't have any more time left.
Time flies when you're lecturing people. Yeah, I mean,
that's
having fun.
It's true. Now, look, we haven't gotten around to getting on to the Fender Bender Raddest Car Awards. I feel we might kick that off next week.
We will.
Feel free to
think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Have a think about it. Go to our Facebook
page.
Please
let us know. Facebook us, email us, text us, do whatever. Let us know, and you know, we'll lay out all the ground rules and things next week.
Exactly.
But use this week to just have a think.
Yeah.
Have a think back to what's happened this year.
Exactly. And, you know, what you like. What's a sexy car? What's a cool car?
Coolest concept we can do as well.
Concept. And I like the idea of having best sensible car.
Yes.
I don't know why.
The best sensible cars don't get enough love.
This,
you know,
is the
they
thing.
Serve a purpose.
This is what I'm talking
just
about.
Just don't vote for the Camry.
Camry's banned.
Is that the BS car for short? Best sensible?
Oh, my God.
Controversial.
Outrageous.
Outrageous.
We have had some saucy language today on Fender Bender. Big thank you to Byron Mathiudakis. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
We love having you on.
Thank you.
Of course, Mike, as always, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
The pleasure's all mine.
That's right. Don't forget to download Fender Bender Podcasts. Wow, that could be quite disgusting. Podcasts.
Wow.
Sorry. Sorry about that, guys. Podcasts are available on the Joy website. Big thanks to Jerry and Marcus on the phones. Again, do go to Facebook and like Fender Bender Joy. That's it. That's the show. I'm Tim Nicholson. This has been Fender Bender. Safe driving.
Beep.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.